thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I'm back.
Here's John Williams.
I actually was gone. Domati, I'm sure, missed me greatly, along with Joe Brand. Pete McMurray filled in for me on Saturday. I hate it when Pete fills in because he's really good. That's Pete McMurray filling in for me on the Saturday show. I'm on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, and Monday through Friday, 1 to 3. Yeah, that's my gig. This is John Williams. And by the way, quick round of applause for producer Elif Garris, who returns from a two-week sojourn. She was overseas visiting her home country of Turkey, in whose language she is fluent. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Oh, your English is really good.
Oh, thanks.
Did you speak Turkish when you were gone?
Yes.
And does it come just quite naturally to you and quickly, or do you have to pause before you get up to speed?
There are a lot of pauses, but I...
No trouble conversing, right?
Yeah. I understand it perfectly.
I think we are lucky to, on this show, have three languages in which the staff is fluent. None of them are French or Spanish. They are Turkish, and Violetta is fluent in Serbian.
Serbian and Romanian.
Oh, pardon me. There's three languages there, and then I am fluent in English, so we have four. And I speak high school French, so four and a half. My family's always rolling their eyes, but whenever I get a chance to say, oh, vraiment, which is really in French, then it makes me feel like, or I could, you know, people that live in our building are French-speaking and English as well, but they speak frequently in French. And so the other day, I had my dog out front, Bingo, and I said, voici mon chien. Here is my dog. And they looked at me like, really, dude? We know it's a dog. You live in the building with us. We know, you know, why would you, in English, would you ever come up to a neighbor and go, here's my dog? But but I so wanted to flex my French muscle that I said, voici mon chien. And they went, uh-huh. They didn't know what to do with that. And so then they kind of nodded knowingly, like I had just discovered a new species. And then we moved on. So anyway, that's the extent of our being multilingual here on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio. So nice to have Elif back in the house. Producer Griffin will go back to his Saturday slot with us, and we're glad that you're listening as well. Okay, so back to the usual grind then. Let's start with the news click over the weekend. It was an interesting one. Elif, what was the news click, please?
Do you wish that the military parade would go on? No, 99%. Yes, 1%.
How about that? 99%. Nobody. And by the way, this is a survey with a plus or minus rate of accuracy of 100%. But virtually nobody said that they wanted that military parade that the president envisions to go on. They may put it next year. The new news click is, are there too many Uber and Lyft drivers on Chicago area roads? Are there too many Uber and Lyft drivers on Chicago area roads? They're talking about that in Illinois now. And we'll talk about that a little after 1:30. Reason I wasn't on the Saturday show was because we were at the College of DuPage and that Thomas Jefferson show happened. And I'm telling you what, our TJ was on his game. Here's just a couple of quick clips. This is us giving Thomas Jefferson an early birthday present because, in fact, the day of the show, Saturday, was Meriwether Lewis's birthday. Meriwether Lewis is a great protege, you know, the Lewis and Clark expedition. He was a great protege of Thomas Jefferson, and so he was always pointing out to us in advance of the show that it was Meriwether's birthday, so we got him a little cupcake.
You told us on the radio the other day that today is Meriwether Lewis's birthday, is it not?
It is. My protege, Meriwether Lewis, of the famous Lewis and Clark expedition.
So we have a birthday cake. From Meriwether Lewis. I don't have enough for everybody. You're going to get corn.
You spared no expense, I see, yes. And you know, one of the greatest explorers who ever lived gets a cupcake.
Meriwether Lewis. And then we said, were it your birthday, what would be an appropriate gift for you?
Right.
And you said, a fine French wine. So we have some...
I said, a case, I think I said. But
I'll make it up to you because that's not all.
Ooh.
Tickets to Hamilton.
Really?
There's this musical about Hamilton. And I'm telling you, it rocks.
No.
People pay a lot of money and wait months for the chance to go see Hamilton.
You are giving me tickets to Hamilton. A man who, from the moment that history stooped to recognize him, represented a tissue of machinations against a country which not only gave him bread and board, but heaped its honors on his head. He was a monarchist. He was a hereditary monarchist. He regarded the people who are in this audience as beneath respect. He said the people, they are a beast, a rabble, entirely incapable of self-government. And now you want me to go sing. Well, these are expensive.
Took another look at the tickets and thought better of it. So if you have the founding father or one of them there, I mean, let's put him to good use, right? So I thought this was a pretty appropriate question.
There is no way that you can argue, in my opinion, that a person who is willing to work and cannot find work should starve while you have more than any rational being could ever need.
Speaking of billionaires, we got two guys running for governor. And I was going to ask you if you could help us figure out which one to vote for. Wouldn't you like to know who? And it seems to me like the only question for him would be, should I vote for the guy with the most bathrooms or the fewest bathrooms? Because they're running TV commercials, and the one guy says that he took all the toilets out of his house, and that lowered his property value, and he had to pay less in taxes. And that guy said that the other guy has way too many houses anyway. He's got way too many bathrooms. Your thoughts?
I suppose I would start by saying, what's a bathroom? We did not have bathrooms in my time. We didn't bathe much in my time. I was a sort of an avant-garde planner at Monticello. There's a privy. An indoor privy, but it is, by your standards, exceedingly barbarous.
Yeah. You didn't have it at Monticello, that beautiful building? You spent all
our kitchens place? Were separate because they often burned and therefore burned down the house. We bathed infrequently, let's say, and we really lived in an age of the sponge bath, more or less. Now, I was a little more fastidious than the average Virginian, but it is the case, say, in the 17th century, in the age of Samuel Pepys, the great 17th century British diarist, he and his wife Elizabeth would each take two baths per annum. And they didn't always synchronize, and so not to be too graphic with a mixed audience, but she would deny him sexual access for weeks after her bath because she didn't want to pollute herself with his...
Right.
With his soiled body.
Sure, you think it'd dawn on him that this would be a good time for me to get a bath too, but...
Well, sir.
You know,
my point is that that if you have reached the point where you can have a significant public dispute over the number of bathrooms in your possession, then you have reached the end times, in my view.
Yeah, no argument here. That was Thomas Jefferson. I love it when you ask him a question and he gives you these little asides. He then went on to talk about how to elect a president or a mayor or a governor, but. It's those little detours into life in the 18th century that are kind of fun.
You're transported back to these great minds and how they live so differently.
I know. And, you know, that was one point that he made over again, was you guys are trying to figure out how to run the world in 2018 based on a constitution and a declaration. We always defer to the founding fathers. He goes, our life was so different than yours. You know, you shouldn't look to us, really. You should be tearing up the Constitution and starting over. So he's always deferential that way. But I did ask him, it's called constructionist. Are you a person who interprets the Constitution literally, or should we, you know, interpret it figuratively? It's the same argument that people have when they talk about religion. Should you read the Quran and say that's what it says, or the Bible and say that's what it says or not? Are you a literalist or not? So we went down that road briefly, and here's where that ended up.
I'm a strict constructionist. I believe that we should do exactly what was enumerated in the Constitution
well,
and not a bit more.
If we knew what the heck you guys were talking about when you
wait a minute.
Said some of that stuff.
You know, I don't like your attitude, sir. We not only have the Constitution, but you have the Federalist Papers written by Hamilton and Madison and John Jay, but particularly by my closest friend, Mr. Madison. They are the best guide to the Constitution and its purposes that could possibly be devised anywhere on earth at any time. Maybe the best book ever written about constitutions. And Mr. Madison, who was a genius, took down a verbatim transcript of everything that occurred at the Constitutional Convention. It nearly killed him. He sat right in the front, and without shorthand, he tried to take down everything to record it using the only technology we had, which was a quill pen. And he very nearly succeeded. And so you can now go and read The Federalist. You can read his amazing notes from the Constitution, which were not published until after his lifetime. And then there is a whole body of case law for 200 years that has tried to clarify and reflect upon this. So if you're perplexed, and I mean no disrespect, it's because you haven't been doing any reading.
Yeah. Well, we haven't, but the Second Amendment is not clear at all.
It's clear to me.
What would you say?
I believe that a free man is a man with a gun.
So there you go. That's Thomas Jefferson. He then went on to talk a little bit more about the Second Amendment. Once again, thanks if you came to the show. Thanks to our sponsors, American Sale and Twin Garden Farms, the folks with the Me Rice Sweet Corn. We really did give everybody a certificate to a free bag of Me Rice Sweet Corn, and we gave some to Thomas Jefferson, too. John, you need to learn to say, stay off my grass.
In French, I think is what they're insinuating.
Oh, really? Is that because I'm way too persnickety or picky?
Maybe. I don't know.
And it would be a good expression to know how to say, and I do not know how to say that.
I don't either.
John, make a joke of JB in his bathrooms, but the bottom line is he cheated the system with the help of other crony Democrats. Did you see a couple of texts that have poured in? Did you see that Barack Obama has cut a campaign spot for JB? Now look, JB's a good guy. Here's why I think. The whole Obama thing. I think the president, the former president, Obama, has done a pretty good job staying out of the Twitter sphere, where Donald Trump is continually inserting his opinions and rallying support for his allies and criticizing the people he doesn't like. There's Barack Obama on the sidelines watching all of this, and Obama has largely stayed away. So it's interesting to see him dip his toe in the political waters. And maybe in other states, the former president is advocating with TV commercials for people.
Yeah, well, this is different. This is campaigning for someone running for election.
Meaning? Well, but Donald Trump is often tweeting his endorsement of candidates around the country, among other. And then he's,
yeah, but that's a fraction of what I mean.
Then he does the witch hunt stuff too.
Right. Endorsing a candidate of your own party and cutting a TV or radio commercial for them is pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. But really, when's the last time you saw Barack Obama speak out on something these days? It doesn't jump to mind, does it?
He gave a speech in South Africa a few weeks ago.
A few weeks ago.
He did come out with his list of endorsements a couple of weeks ago, which is silly to me. I mean, he's a Democrat. He's endorsing Democrats.
I know. He's endorsing JB.
It's news when he cuts an ad for
shocked.
Bruce Rauner.
Well, and he did remind us. He goes, so I'm endorsing JB for my home state of Illinois. And I went, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. It is your home state. You got some skin in this game. It's 1:22. This is WGN. The new news click is about what is the new news click about? Did I mention this, Elif? The new news click is going to be: are there too many Uber and Lyft drivers on Chicago area roads? Go to WGNRadio.com, and you can vote with your mouse on that right now. But I also posted something on Facebook that I really want you to think about. We'll get to that in a minute. I went to the Air and Water Show over the weekend. V, did you catch any of that?
I was downtown, so I was looking up, but I didn't make it to the beach.
Those things, it's always a good thing to do, V, when you're downtown.
They're so loud, and where I live, it's close enough to the lake, but there's enough trees, so I could really hear them, but it's so frustrating to hear this, and you can't see, so you just gravitate to the lakefront. And what a great weekend it was for the Air and Water Show. A couple million folks go and look at that thing. It's just amazing. Take a couple of these calls. All right, Wanda, this is John. You're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hi, John. I just wondered when Jefferson's program will be available on CD.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I've enjoyed the past ones so much, and I enjoy listening to them over and over again.
We're going to have a meeting after sometime this week after the show now, that is, after the Jefferson Show, to figure out how to resolve this.
Sure.
Because we don't put out CDs anymore because they don't make CD players anymore. And so then we said, okay, well, let's broadcast it, and then there's rights issues. So
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I know. Trust me. If it were up to me, we would just crank it out and it'd be done by now. But it will be available somehow, some way.
Okay.
Do me this favor, Wanda. Call me back later this week, because it did sound good, didn't it? He really is good, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Okay, call me on Friday and I'll have an answer for you.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry, yeah, I should know the answer to that, but literally I don't. That's why I so want you to go to the shows, because they really are terrific moments. Colleen, this is John. You're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hi, King John. How are you?
Good. What's up?
So listen, I'm listening to the radio. I'm hearing all your little snippets, the outtakes from Saturday, patiently waiting. Was it gray or was it blue? Oh, what did we wear?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I went with the swimsuit and the flippers. We posted a gray suit with a red tie and a blue suit with a red and white kerchief. I went with the blue suit.
I voted gray.
You know, a lot of us here thought the gray was the better choice.
Yeah.
But we put it up to Twitter and the Twitter poll. Blue just beat out the gray suit. So
the World Wide Web wins again.
Violetta and I agonizingly counted. You know what's funny? When we did it on the Twitter poll, the blue suit won. We posted pictures. Then we did post it on Facebook, and the gray suit won on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that says something about the demographics or the preferences of the two, you know, platforms, but I went with the blue, and it seemed to work out.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So this morning, Brenda and I were in the car, and I said, hey, Brenda, let's do the Dutch Reach. And we did. And it was pretty dang good.
Was that your first time?
It was the first time we'd ever done the Dutch Reach in the car.
I can't believe you've never done that. I thought everyone's done that.
The Dutch Reach. So I'm reading from today's Chicago Tribune. Mary Wisniewski has this. Another bill signed by the governor adds the Dutch Reach method of opening car doors to the Illinois Rules of the Road manual. If you open your door using the Dutch Reach, you will do so more safely. The Dutch Reach encourages drivers and passengers to use the hand farthest from the door to reach across the body to open the door after parking. Think about that. Wherever you are, when you are driving, you put the car in park, and now you're going to open your door. You use your left hand. It's right there. But they want you to use your right hand if you're the driver, or your left hand if you're the passenger. Why? Because when you use your right hand, you turn your body maybe 45-degree angle to get over to that doorknob, and now you will see a little bit out your left eye. You'll see what's behind you. And if a bicycle is coming along, you're not going to open up your door right now, and the bicycle isn't going to crash into you. They pioneered this method in Holland, and it is known as the Dutch Reach. And I thought, when I first thought about doing the Dutch Reach, because I'm not as young as I used to be, and I thought, oh, God, I'll injure myself. So I thought, you know, it's just going to be a lot of torque on the back. It's going to hurt. So I went ahead and Dutch Reached, and it wasn't too painful. I kind of liked it. And I thought, what do you know? I can see behind me now. So that was the Dutch Reach. And I'm telling you, I'm going to do the Dutch Reach all the time. I'm now a Dutch Reacher.
You're addicted.
My back cracks every time I stand up, so I wonder how this would treat my back.
Maybe it would be helpful. Maybe it would make it worse. I don't know. You might want to consult your doctor before doing the Dutch Reach. Make sure
and don't
that
do it for more than 3 hours.
Make sure that the Dutch Reach is right for you. That's right. It's so simple, and it absolutely makes you think about that. And I don't know, you know, there have been more than once where a motorcycle or a bicycle zooms along and you get mad at the motorcycle or the bicyclist. You go, you idiot. You know, someone's going to get killed here.
I know, but those are the moments you feel so alive. All of a sudden you're jolted to reality. You're like, whoa.
A jolt of adrenaline. Unless you're the bicycle driver who just got conked.
Oh, well.
And, you know, it ruins the day for the driver of the car, because now you've got to pick the guy up. It says
no, I'm saying it's exciting when you don't actually hit someone. Just close calls.
This prods people in motor vehicles to look back for cyclists. And this is part of the rules of the road. I don't know that this is, you know, has the force of law, but the governor signed legislation. I don't suppose it's a criminal offense if you do it differently. But if you are doing it correctly in Illinois, you use your opposite hand to open the door. It was put forward by the Active Transportation Alliance, a bike, pedestrian, and transit user advocacy group. It was pioneered in the Netherlands. Illinois Department of Transportation data, listen to this, shows dooring crashes on the rise across the state. In 2015, there were more than 300 in Chicago, a 50% increase from the previous year. I guess that was the year most recently for which they have available data. I'll bet it's even higher now just because it seems to be more and more bikes weaving in and out. Oh, my God, John. Says this texter, my dad always told us to look before opening the car door. Whatever happened to common sense? From 269, as the mom of a bike messenger who was injured due to a cab passenger opening up the door on the street side, I applaud you for bringing this to everyone's attention. Well, I'm happy to do so. It just seems like such a simple and good habit. What's the matter, V?
I think we can also get the kids on the social. This could be a viral thing. Show us how you do the Dutch reach.
Show us your Dutch reach.
Yeah. Have you ever done the Dutch reach in the car?
Listen to this. The new law, there's another law the governor signed, which makes the penalty for distracted driving, if you're using your phone while you're driving, it makes the penalty $75 now for the first offense, $100 for the second, $125 for the third, $150 for the fourth or subsequent offenses. Under current law, if you are pulled over for driving while operating your phone, it's just a warning. I didn't know that. I thought we hit you pretty hard the first time.
I don't think it's just a warning. I just don't think it's considered a moving violation.
It says under current law, drivers get a warning and no fine the first time. And really, the first time you got a ticket for that?
I mean, how do they know it's my first time?
Yeah, well, I suppose if they gave you a warning once, it's recorded that way. And then how many times have you been given a ticket for driving while distracted?
Well, this was, you know, back in the day.
So hundreds and hundreds of times.
No.
Steve, back in the day.
Yeah. It was like on the brink of people weren't sure if you should text and drive.
What day was that?
No, I get that. I
mean, like now it's very frowned upon.
John, you get that, but she didn't have a driver's license in that day.
Yes, I did.
Well, I think back in the day for a millennial is 2 years ago.
Right.
But you do remember when
6 years ago was not that big of a deal.
When we first had car phones, it was not the scourge to be operating it the way it is now, the car and the phone at the same time. And it's sort of like in Mad Men, they used to have a cocktail in the car. And maybe you shouldn't, but it wasn't...
Well, the phrase, one for the road.
Totally.
Roadies.
I've been watching Don Draper a little bit again lately. Not that I've seen that scene per se.
That explains your clothes.
I just...
and the Dutch reach.
I just remember that, you know, that was one of the things that would come up was, them taking a beer or a glass of ice and a Manhattan into the car and... And, of course, now we'd be aghast at that. But back then, it was a shrug.
Okay, so here's a really stupid question, but you just said something. If you get a warning ticket, do they keep a record of that?
I don't think they do.
Well, you guys, then how would they know?
Because it's one of those, like, wink, wink, I'm giving you a warning. Warnings.
Although they do give you an actual ticket receipt, so they...
Yeah, I think a warning is an actual thing.
But I don't think, but when you get pulled over again 6 weeks later, they say we gave you a warning in April on this?
Yeah, they have, Steve, they have these things, they're called computers.
Yeah.
And the computer remembers.
I just thought they kind of disappeared. I don't know the answer to that.
See, I've never had a written warning.
You're laughing at me, but you might not be right.
Me? Wrong?
He guessed the weather in Dubuque.
Do we need to go back to my triangulation?
So if you get three warning tickets, does that equal a real ticket?
Okay.
So you guys... the first one is a warning. Then there's a fee.
I got to tell you something. Listen to this. The new law, which goes into effect next July, makes we're 11 months out on this thing, makes the penalty for a first offense $75. I'm surprised it is that soft. I think the penalty for driving while operating your phone, first offense, should be $250.
Wow.
Because it's the same as drunk driving.
Does it matter if you are stopped, though, at a red light?
To the law, no.
Well, right. But I'm saying to you and your $250 ticket.
No. I mean, if I think a lot of us, when we're at a light, we'll look at our phones.
So you wouldn't give someone a ticket if they were at a red light?
If I'm the police officer, I don't know what I do.
That's when they get you downtown, because they're on the bikes and they're weaving in and out of traffic.
And they see you looking into your
lap. And they just look right at you.
And they're like, either she's using her phone or she's doing the Dutch reach. Something's going on there.
Either way, we're pulling her over.
No, either way, we don't like that, Missy.
So if you are holding your phone and you look to check the time,
yeah,
you pick it up,
yeah.
Is that a violation?
Yes, you're not allowed to touch your phone.
That's so weird to me.
It's a judgment call. But I think Violetta's right.
So it's okay for me to look at my watch.
You're distracted driving.
But if I'm looking at my watch, it's a legal distraction.
Affirmative.
But if I pick up my phone so that the screen comes on and shows me the time, that's an illegal distraction.
Evidently.
Does your car not have one of those dashboard clocks?
Well, I'd like to see if I have a text.
That's what he's doing. Steve, name the person who was so consumed by it. Gosh, what time is it? Oh, what time is it? What time could it possibly be?
So you have
to look at my phone, officer. I'm really into time.
Officer, do you see what time it is?
Look at that.
You should go find
someone.
Can you
believe it? 7:32. I'll bet a lot of crime's going on now, officer.
Officer, you look, my Fitbit is a minute slower than my phone.
I think the penalty, and this is just help me out on this. 312-981-7200, knowing full well that you have or will be subject to this fine someday, what should the penalty in Illinois be for a first offense? It's going to be an 11-month $75. I think it should be commensurate with what it is if you're DUI, because they say that you're more distracted with your phone than some people are when they're inebriated. This is John Williams. Steve's going to do the news at 2 o'clock. We've got lots of calls here. And by the way, this interest in traffic is based in part on the fact that our news click today is about transportation. Elif, what is the news click, please?
Are there too many Uber and Lyft drivers on Chicago area roads? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Well, we need to take them just so we can send a text while in a vehicle.
Two Chicago aldermen, says the Trib, are considering capping the number of rideshare vehicles for services like Uber and Lyft. I'm really torn about this one because we use those services a lot. I take cabs as often as I can because I like those guys and they were here first. And I think they get a bad knock. But
what's the complaint that there's too many?
Well, for one thing, it puts 60,000 more cars on the road that might not be there. And my complaint about Uber and Lyft is they stop wherever the hell they want and they wait and people are backed up waiting, green lights, intersections. They seem to be oblivious to the rules of the road. They probably don't even do
that. And cabs definitely always listen to the rules of the road.
Right. Okay, fine. But listen, then vote with your mouse. Go to WGNradio.com. The question is, are there too many Uber and Lyft drivers in Chicago roads? You can say no. I'm ready to say yes.
Is the 60,000 number a Chicago number?
The number of rideshare vehicles in Chicago has quadrupled in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but those cars were on the road anyway because they're driving their own cars.
Maybe they wouldn't be out then and there.
Yeah, but they are picking up people who would be driving.
Cabs, who are having fewer customers, or they'd be taking public transportation.
I'm telling you, no, I was in an Uber this weekend going to Ravinia, and we were laughing in the car because we would have never taken a cab, for no good reason, but it just wouldn't have occurred to us. But, you know, people where I live, they take Ubers all the time in situations where they wouldn't take a cab. So I think they're keeping cars off the street.
I agree.
What? Don't spit? Are you spitting? What are you doing?
I'm just fulminating. That was me just fulminating.
I will posit that there are fewer cars on the street because of the 60,000 Uber drivers.
Yeah, so think about that, boys and girls. So because we have these ride-sharing services, Steve thinks that means there are fewer cars on the road.
Well, because think about it. If 10 people are using the same Uber within a night because he's picking up more people, those 10 people would have, at least five of them would have driven.
Right, so that takes their cars off the road. The suggestion is that they would walk, take the L, they take Metra, they would take a cab, they would take a bus. We have all the public transportation we need.
It is called ride sharing, so
Uber and Lyft are obnoxious.
And, no, they're not.
And they're fantastic. So do we have too many? That's the news click. Lots of calls. Let's just take a couple. Tom, you're on WGN. Jump in here. Tom, what do you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, hi. Actually, I drive Uber, too, but in terms of the, what was it, the what was the question, the original door, question there? The door, or
the news click was, are there too many drivers on the road like that? We were also talking about what the fine should be for distracted
driving. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, now I remember. So, yeah, actually, I got a ticket like, I don't know, a year ago or something in the western suburbs, and the guy pulled me over. And it wasn't a warning. I paid the fine, but it was, like Violetta said, I don't think it was reported to the Secretary of State, so it wasn't a moving violation.
So the, but that was your first time, huh?
Yeah, as I recall, and then I've gotten warnings, too, and then it's like, you know, you're talking to Steve. I remember getting, like, a ticket light, document, but it was a warning, so I'm sure it's recorded, so I'm sure they have a way of looking it up.
I appreciate your heads up on that. All right, Steve, so they do keep track, according to Tom, of the warnings. Hey, John, this is from 708. It cost me $600 in Lake County for my first time distracted driving ticket. $600, Lake County, hello. Bill, you're on the air. What do you want to say, Bill? Hi.
Hey, guys, I'm a semi driver, and in a semi, it's a $2,850 fine for the driver and $11,000 fine for the carrier to be on a handheld cell phone.
Wow.
And as far as the warning tickets go, in a semi, you actually get points recorded against you for a warning ticket, so that's definitely recorded. It's called CSA points. They started in 2010.
You think that's a good idea?
It is, but they use it against us in a way that you can't fight a warning ticket, whereas if you got an actual ticket, you could take it to court and fight it.
Yeah.
I got a lane change violation and got a warning ticket. It's like 24 CSA points, which that has nothing to do with taking away your license. But if your company gets too many CSA points, they come in and do an intervention, and you know it can be a money-making venture for local authorities.
Wow, I hadn't heard of any of that. That's amazing. I'm glad you're calling. Drive safely. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for listening.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
Thought I was, but evidently not everybody agrees. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio.
Lord have mercy.
18 stories above the beautiful Chicago River. Downtown's just positively yucky today. I kind of like to go over to the beach, though, and see the action. I hear the waves are pretty crazy. It's dangerous. Don't go in there today, say the folks at the Park District and on WGN Radio News. So there were three transportation topics we've been talking about. Our news click is asking if there's too many Lyft and Uber drivers on the road. The city's talking about curtailing that. I said that I think that the fine for a first-time driving while distracted offense should be more than $75. In July of next year, it'll go up from nothing to $75. Steve Bertrand had a number of sort of quandaries. He really hasn't been able to grasp the essence of this conversation today.
It's complicated.
And we also learned what the Dutch reach is. They say if you're in a car and you are going to get out, you need to reach across your body using the hand farthest from the door, so it'll cause your body to turn a little bit, and you'll look behind you and see if there's a bicycle or motorcycle or something else coming along when you're parallel parking. We've got pages of text messages here. But before we read any of them, I just want to offer the wisdom of Kevin Powell from WGN Radio Sports. Kevin, you've been listening patiently to this conversation. Do you think there are too many Uber and Lyft drivers in the city?
For a man who drives downtown every day, it is absolutely maddening when Uber driver and Lyft drivers decide it's okay to just park wherever they want, including in the middle of busy streets in cramped, narrow Chicago roadways. I think it's more so etiquette by the drivers that bothers me, or lack of etiquette that bothers me, more so than how many of them are, because this is what happens. And I've been in Ubers. I took 3 or 4 Ubers this weekend alone. But this is what happens, especially when you're downtown. You're in the back seat, and maybe you're with a friend, and the Uber driver starts slowing down because you're getting close to your destination, and then somebody in the back seat goes, oh, wait, we're here, we'll just get out right here. And the guy goes, okay, and then they get out. Doesn't matter that they're in the middle of Ohio Street where there's two lanes and the guy behind you can't get around you because the left lane's blocked by other oncoming cars. It's the driver etiquette that drives me absolutely insane.
Follow-up question, Your Honor.
Yeah, sure. Fire away.
You let it go.
Not taking questions, but I'll allow this one.
Okay, so this is the problem with quote-unquote Uber and Lyft. Do you find that this issue also occurs with taxi drivers?
Not nearly as much. No, I think they are much more.
I think they are much more. Take him off the stand.
They are much more in line. I mean, even right outside our building here, just north of our building, they all line up in a fine line, and they all wait for the Swiss Hotel to call them over, and they go pick up. I'm not saying none of them aren't doing
Kevin
this. I'm just saying.
Kevin
just
finished his sentence by saying, and that's the way it should be, damn it.
I think Kevin
is. In which direction? I'll go with it. That's the way it should be, damn it.
I think Kevin is right. I'm so glad. And by the way, if you disagree, contact Kevin Powell.
Well, the cabs behave better because I think the police have really been hard on them through the years.
Yeah, plus Uber drivers aren't driving around bright yellow and lime green cars. Right. Everyone can't necessarily identify an Uber or Lyft.
Yeah, they're just driving nice, clean, people.
I probably took 3 or 4, maybe even 5 Uber drives this past weekend alone. So, yes, I say yes, do it. But when it's downtown, it's a whole different ballgame.
Right.
In the suburbs, you have much more land. There's more space. Downtown, it is absolutely maddening being behind an Uber driver, and they just stop in the middle of a busy, cramped road.
And the other end of that ride is when they're going to pick somebody up, and you're behind them, and they're waiting for the people to come out.
Right.
And I'm like, really?
Come on.
I'm sorry. They're not here. Too bad. You feel boxed in
because you can't go around it's narrow roadways anyway.
I can get around just fine.
Yeah, because we all drive on the sidewalk, Violetta, like you, pulling your little maneuvers out there.
All right, so here's a couple of texts, and then we'll go to some calls. John, if you get a warning ticket for driving while distracted, you have 30 days where if you get pulled over for the same thing, you get a double ticket. 708 says, not that it's important, but is worrying about the Dutch reach the only thing we can agree on these days? John, my wife got a phone ticket in a construction zone for $300. Yes, John, they record warning tickets. Hey, Steve Bertrand, yes, a warning is written, at least in Vernon Hills. That's how the officer gets credit for doing their job. John, I totally agree that first fines for being on your phone in a car should be steep, otherwise there's no deterrent. So a lot of you are still talking about that. But I hope that if we have any takeaway as listeners, it's what Kevin also said, and that is, don't be that guy that says, I know it's the middle of Ohio Street or there's a green light, and go, oh, we'll just get out here. You tend not to do that with cabs. You need to wait until the thing is out of the way.
It's benefits and cons to both, but I think...
A couple of calls. Yeah. Frank's on line 5. Jump in there, Frank. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hey, King John. I do believe that there's a tremendous amount of Uber drivers and Lyft drivers on the road. There's a couple different perspectives you can look at this. With the reduction of the cab industry, Uber drivers are replacing the cab cars. But I believe that there is such a surplus of vehicles on the road that we've exceeded what the cab vehicles used to occupy the roads with. The Uber fares, if you're going 1 mile, you know, if you would call a cab company, they said, we're not going to take you a single mile, take the bus.
Yeah.
Well, it's more convenient just to call an Uber and pay the $3 or $4 to go that same mile.
Yeah, I know. I know. Listen, this is not like, I know it sounds like Uber and Lyft are bad. I'm an advocate. I mean, I use them all the time. Kevin uses them all the time. So they serve a purpose. We all need to, them and us as passengers, do it better. And by the way, the city is, I didn't invent this. The city is the one that's thinking about taking Uber and Lyft cars off the road. And I don't know if that's the solution or not, but it sure does seem to me like we have, if you wanted to tell me there were too many of them, I might be persuaded. But if nothing else, the cab drivers do seem to operate better. But not everybody agrees. Hey, John, 262, the cabs break all of the rules of the road. Come on.
yes, they could be very aggressive. I just think in terms of stopping in the middle of the road, it just seems different to me. I've noticed it different.
Every now and then I do get in the car with a cab driver who's like very aggressive, very fast, very dangerous. And I usually, to be honest with you, I'm kind of like, all right.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I am.
My biggest pet peeve is the stopping and clogging roadways.
Right, because cab drivers who are like insane, violent, aggressive are usually pretty good at it too.
They know every inch of the streets and they get you wherever you need to be in like a record amount of time.
Yeah, you just have to hold your breath the whole time.
You do, but they're like, there may be buses on either side and you go, there's no way you're going to make it. There's no way you're going to make it. Boom! He makes it every time.
I guess I'm just saying don't stop in the middle of the roadway if you're a cabbie, an Uber driver.
That's all we got.
That's really what's bothering me lately.
Patrick says, what about cab drivers? Patrick, you're on the air. Hi.
Again, the Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, and the taxi drivers all killed me. When you go out of the city, like 90s, perfect example, is they'll stay in the left-hand lane, go under the speed limit until like they're past Cumberland to get up at the O'Hare exit, so they got to go over four lanes. They don't care. They like your guy was saying, they'll stop in the middle of anywhere.
Yep.
When you tell them, if you're in the back of a taxi, you say, here we are, stop here. They'll stop. They don't care. And then with the distracted drivers kill me, because these people are, a lot of them are people that are driving over a $50,000 car, but they can't figure out Wi-Fi for their phone where they don't need to be talking. And I mean, I get behind. I'm on the road all the time.
Yeah.
I do heating and air conditioning, and I'll be behind Infinities, Mercedes, Lexuses, and these jamokes have their phone up to the air. And it's like, I know your car is Bluetooth capable. Why are you not on that?
Because you are not Bluetooth capable. That's a good point. It's a good question. All right, I got to let you go. Thanks for the call. I presume you're operating safely, and I appreciate you joining us. John says, 815, why don't you use a cab then? I do often, but a lot of times I use Uber and Lyft, like when we're leaving our place and we want a ride to come get us. You know what, though? Brenda did this the other day because when she got a new phone, she forgot to put, or we hadn't yet put Uber and Lyft on her phone. The app wasn't literally on her phone. So then she just looked up the cab company and called them. And there's an app that they have that works just like Uber and Lyft. And they were there within like 90 seconds. And if I was a cab company in this town, I would run commercials on WGN radio. And it would say, if you love Uber and you love Lyft, you're going to love Yellow Cab, because we offer the exact same service with professional drivers who can drive like all hell and get you there safe and sound. That'd be the exact commercial I put on there. They're going to just go zippity-split, man. And they're going to get you there. And for the first two times, we'll give you a free ride or 50% off or something. They have an app. There's an app. The cab will do the same thing that the Uber does. I cut you off, Kev.
I was unaware of that. But I think our sales team is just taking notes down right now, because that sounds like a perfect pitch to Yellow Cab.
Well, I think the Uber rides are more affordable, too. Did you say that?
And they don't charge you per person.
Uber rides will get you through the nose if there's demand, right? What do they call that?
Surcharge.
Peak timing or surge timing?
Charges? Yeah. So I don't know. I haven't noticed such a difference myself.
Right. And there's no surge charge for cabs. There just aren't any cabs.
Right.
Well, that's
right?
It. The cab,
it's like,
is.
It's raining.
But the Lyft isn't there either. Like when you walk out onto your corner, is there a Lyft car right there waiting for you? No. What do? You get on your phone, you hit the app, and then one's there in 3 minutes. You can do that with a cab as well. They just don't advertise on WGN. And they should be. Okay, let's do, I'm going to do Amy Kite. First, I'm going to do this.
It's your non-sequitur of the day.
Playing our little game here. Get ready.
Come on, it's time to play.
Listen to this now.
Non-sequitur.
Well, he wanted to charge me $3,000.
Oh. Were you listening to Steve Cochran this morning? The non-sequitur of the day is a little game we play where we take something from one of the previous shows and we ask you to tell us what was that person talking about.
He wanted to charge me $3,000.
Okay, you probably know that voice belongs to Steve Stone. He was on the morning show this morning. What was Steve Stone talking about when he said...
He wanted to charge me $3,000.
It's your non-sequitur of the day.
So call me now.
Come on, it's time.
If you know, you win the prize.
Non-sequitur.
Well, he wanted to charge me $3,000.
What was Steve Stone?
The Uber driver charging Steve Stone during surcharge moments.
An outrage! It was not that. So 312-981-7200, get it right, we'll give you a prize on WGN. We're doing our non sequitur. It's a little game we play where
it's your non sequitur of the day.
We ask you to listen.
Come on, it's time to fly.
Tell us what they were talking about.
Non sequitur.
Well, he wanted to charge me $3,000.
Okay, so who's going to be the first call? Is it Josh? Steve. Steve from Lake Zurich. Steve is right there. Hey, Steve, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
I'm really good, man. Thanks for listening.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
So the question is, when we play the non sequitur, we play a little odd clip. We ask you to tell us what they were talking about. What was Steve Stone talking about?
You know, I caught right at the tail end of it, right when he was talking about it. I believe he was talking about when he came up as a rookie, Gaylord Perry, telling him he'd charge him $3,000 to show him, I think, was to throw his spitball.
Well, he wanted to charge me $3,000, and I told him at the time that it was... I said, you're pretty much talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of 45% of my salary, my take-home pay.
Can you imagine that? And he told him with a straight face. He didn't say, no, just kidding, or he was just kidding. He comes, here's Steve Stone, he's playing for the Giants, there's all these great Hall of Famers all around him, and Gaylord Perry says, I'll teach you the spitball, but it'll cost you $3,000. Stoney said, I didn't have it. What a funny story this morning with Stone and Cochran and the gang. Well, you got it, man. That was the non sequitur of the day. Well done, sir.
Thanks, John.
Let me see what I got for you. I got a prize for you. You know those America Weathermakers indoor-outdoor the weather stations or something? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
I've got one for you here. I have a prize list, and I threw it away. But anyway, we're going to get you one of those, okay?
Sounds good, John. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for calling. Here it is, the Desktop Indoor Weather Station, brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC.
That was your non-sequitur of the day. For all the winners, I say hooray. Non-sequitur.
Reading over the weekend that Jerry Seinfeld. How old is Jerry Seinfeld? Anyone? What's
63.
Your guess? 63. Kevin, how old is
62.
Violetta, how old is Jerry Seinfeld?
84.
He is 64 years old. And he was interviewed on the back page of the New York Times Sunday Magazine. And they said to him, you've been outspoken about audiences being too sensitive and politically correct these days. Have you ever apologized for a joke? He says, nope, jokes are not real. People assume that when you say something that you believe it. It's purely comedic invention. He said, you know, I do this whole bit about Pop-Tarts and how much I love them. I don't love Pop-Tarts. It's funny. It's just funny to say it, so I say it.
The Pop-Tart, by the way, was a moment in time. The baby boom, and I am of that era, and when I was about 8, they invented the Pop-Tart, the back of my head blew right off. Right? Do you remember? Like, what? I was in the supermarket aisle with my mother, and I'm like, hold it, hold up, hold everything. What the hell is that? Fruit-filled frosted rectangles in a box, the same. The food is in the shape of the box. What is this? You open the box, they're not even in there. They're in packets. Remember the packets? Lined with some kind of metallic alloy from NASA. To protect them from gamma rays and Russian satellites might shoot at your brown sugar cinnamons. You had to protect the... And you open the packet. How many were in the packet? Two. Why two? One's not enough. Three is too many. That's why. It was perfect. Perfect vision of the future from Kellogg's. Two in each packet. Two slots in the toaster. So you're 8 years old, and you're like, I can do this.
I I do remember when my I remember my first Pop-Tart experiences too. I went with the strawberry one.
And always strawberry.
Awesome. Oh, I love the strawberry Pop-Tart.
Maybe
with or without
a s'more.
Frosting.
Without.
Yeah. Wait, what? Without?
I was a purist.
Yeah, I like those ones too.
I didn't even know that existed. But
the ones with frosting are great too.
Yeah, there were a few of the naked ones, right? Yeah,
I like the naked ones.
Yeah. See, I don't think there's enough frosting even on the frosted ones because I don't eat the edges that don't have frosting.
Understood. That's a question of taste.
And there's not enough jelly.
Well, but here's what you do, and this is why you don't need frosting. Put it in the toaster. And one of the saddest things in the world is to have a burnt Pop-Tart, kind of like microwave popcorn.
Mm.
But you put that in there and you get it just right. And then you put a little butter on top of that.
Whoa.
And you are living large.
That's a life hack right there.
the only thing worse, or the similar thing to the overdone Pop-Tart, is the underdone pot pie. You should wait 32 minutes for that Swanson pot pie. And then it'd come out a little doughy, wouldn't be right.
But it's all great, and then you get to the core, and there's like a frozen chunk of turkey in the middle.
That's like the gaffing a bit about
Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets. Oh, my God. But so you know, the only reason we're even doing this is because he was saying, look, I don't love Pop-Tarts. I just say that because it's funny. So if I was saying something about race or religion or something else that made people upset, you've got to stop doing that to comedians and to each other. Let people be funny and irreverent and offensive sometimes, says Jerry Seinfeld. And a lot of comics subscribe to that. So at the end of this little article, they say to him this. Let's say that we're sending another Voyager out into space, and you get to choose the one joke that we include on the golden record to represent comedy to the aliens. What joke would you pick? And it's a two-line joke, and it's pretty funny. And I hadn't heard it before. You will, coming up. We were talking earlier about Pop-Tarts, because nothing else is going on in the world. America and the world, they're so safe, secure, and sane that Pop-Tarts are top of mind for us. Actually, we were referring to the Jerry Seinfeld piece in the New York Times over the weekend, where they said, you've been an outspoken critic of audiences these days being too sensitive and politically correct. Have you ever apologized for a joke? And he said, no, because jokes aren't real. People assume that when you say something, that you believe it. It's purely comedic invention. You know, I do this whole bit about Pop-Tarts and how much I love them. I do not love Pop-Tarts. It's just funny. It's funny to say, so I say it. They said, what did you make of James Gunn, the Guardians of the Galaxy director, getting fired for his old Twitter jokes? He said, I didn't read the jokes, but if they're jokes, it doesn't matter. You use Twitter mostly for self-promotion, they said. Why no Twitter jokes? He said, I don't hear the laugh. Why waste my time? It's a horrible performing interface. I can't think of a worse one. I always think about people that write books. What a horrible feeling it must be to have poured your soul into a book over a number of years, and somebody comes up to you and goes, I love your book, and then they walk away, and you have no idea what worked and what didn't. That to me is hell. That's my definition of hell. And then they asked, let's say that we're sending another Voyager out into space and you get to choose the one joke we include on the golden record to represent comedy to the aliens. What joke would you pick? He said, I would put in Rodney Dangerfield's joke, I was making love with my wife and she had a faraway look in her eyes. And I said, darling, is there someone else? And she said, there must be. That's a perfect joke, as I can imagine, said Jerry Seinfeld. I was looking for Rodney Dangerfield to say that. And so I spent about a half an hour just watching old Rodney Dangerfield stuff on my computer this morning. If you watch Rodney Dangerfield on your computer for a half an hour, you will hear 100 jokes. He just goes boom, 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 boom. And they're dated. You know, I mean, the kind of jokes, it's actually funny because it's the kind of jokes that Jerry Seinfeld's very prickly about these days. You ought to be able to say those kind of jokes, but these days a lot of them wouldn't wash. There he is on The Tonight Show saying things about his wife or Jews or something, and Johnny's just laughing. Tears are in his eyes. The audience is hysterical. You don't say those kind of jokes anymore. Darling, is there someone else? She said, there must be. You're disappointed now, aren't you? Seinfeld said that's the perfect joke. Hey, John, says this texter, I took Uber after Pearl Jam Saturday night and walked 7/10 of a mile west to Ashland and paid $23 for my half-hour ride home. I'm not sure what this person is telling me, that the surge pricing got them and it was too expensive or not. But somebody also wrote this. They said, John, can you guys please explain to me why taxis from O'Hare can charge 1.5 times the fare to a rider outside the city? I think we can. If you pick up a taxi in O'Hare and you're going to go to, say, Joliet, they're going to charge you 1.5 times outside of the city limits. And it's the same way going the other way, too. If you grab a cab in some places and you want to go into the city too far, they'll do a surcharge. They sure do going the other way. I would get a cab and at the airport, and I would say, take me home. And I didn't live in the city. And they'd make that face, and they go, okay, but it's going to cost you 1.5 times because coming back, he ain't going to get a ride. So you have to pay 1.5 times, at least for part of the ride, to make up for their deadheading back into the city where maybe they'll get a fare. At least that's my understanding of it. I wanted to ask Kevin, who's in the sports box getting ready for Rowan Anna, how excited he is about the Michael Kopech call-up tomorrow night at the Cell at Guaranteed Rate, at the bank.
The Rate, Sox Park, 35th and Shields, whatever you want to call
Comiskey.
It. Comiskey. I think that's what most Sox fans continue to go with.
What do you think of this?
Well, a shameless plug here, John. I just posted a blog at WGNRadio.com, and the title is White Sox Make the Right Call by Promoting Michael Kopech. So that sort of gives you my answer. I just think that...
You just did that because of what I told you.
No, I can't type that fast, John. That was just minutes ago. But look, I think Michael Kopech did everything he possibly could do to prove to the White Sox that he deserves at least a promotion to the majors. He's been absolutely dominant over the past 7 starts down at AAA. There was nothing more he could show the Sox. It was just a matter. The question, the way I started is, look, the only question in mind was, do you want to reward one of your top prospects for doing everything he possibly could do this year? Or do you want to manipulate his service time in order to prolong his free agency down the road in 5 or 6 years? Does it matter to you that much? Is money and control more important than simply rewarding one of your players for doing an outstanding job?
That's even a question?
Yeah. Which way? You're going with the control and the money?
Yes. Of course you are.
I think there are too many things in play. The White Sox have been notorious to not even letting players get to the free agency point where, let's say in 3 years, they just give him a long-term deal. There's too many things that come into play for me.
Okay, let me tell you this. The first thing that came into my mind when they said they're going to call him up, he might get 7 starts, right?
It sort of depends. It depends on innings limits. I mean, he's at about 126 innings pitched this year, so it's just a matter of how many innings they're going to cap him off at.
But if he stayed in the minors, he would have had fewer innings to pitch because they play
a
shorter season.
They're done in a couple weeks here.
And to me, there are only so many innings in the tank. Every pitcher has so many innings they can throw over the course of their
career. By pitcher.
And you don't know how many you're going to get.
Right.
Why are you going to bring them up now and start the meter?
Well, because Rick Hahn said specifically he wants to add innings to his arm this year because that's building it up. I mean, you're never just going to go from 120. If you're going to be a full-time starting pitcher in this league, you're probably going to pitch anywhere from 175 to 200-plus innings. So if he's one of your prospects, that's part of the development process is extending those innings cap per year. And it's kind of a step-by-step basis.
Yeah. Well, he could do that in the minors. He could do that on the sidelines. I just think you get him in there, and I know he'll get real-world experience, and everybody will benefit from that, including the gait and his mind. He'll learn how to pitch in the pros, but he can do that next year. They're not going to be in the playoffs next year anyway. If they are, they aren't going to go far. He'll get all the real-world experience he needs next year. Mm-hmm. I would do every logical reason you have to bring him up today, tomorrow, I say it makes all the same sense opening day next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to argue. I mean, it's tough to argue me with that point. Just for me personally, I just think that employers should reward the employee who's done an outstanding job.
He's not making minimum wage, Kev. I mean,
he's not making a lot of dough down there.
Don't you think that
they don't?
Here's what I would do. I'd say, now listen.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily in terms of that. Like, the guy's going to be a millionaire.
That's what I mean.
He already isn't.
Be patient, okay? You're already
right.
A reality TV star, for crying out loud.
Well, I think he broke up with her, so.
Oh, really? That's over?
Whatever show that was, yeah.
Well, I would just say be patient. Don't worry, we're going to take care of you. If you deliver next year, you're going to, in a few years, you're going to get all the money in the world. Isn't this what the Cubs did to Chris Bryant?
Yeah, they did.
How's that working out for everybody?
It's working out really well. But there's also other players who have been brought up early and are doing really well, too.
Don't you think Kerry Wood blew out because he pitched too many innings too soon?
It's
not like
he was
a one and done. Kerry had a nice career, but I think we would have gotten more out of him if they didn't.
They could have if they treated him better. I mean, that was already 20 years ago. I think baseball now, you see less and less injuries, like shoulder injuries, and you just see less injuries in general. I shouldn't necessarily say that because Tommy John surgery is everywhere on all different levels. But I think that they have a better understanding of how to protect arms.
Yeah.
And like the White Sox aren't going to bring up Michael Kopech if they think there's any even risk of adding potential serious injury or anything like that.
Is this true? I have it in my head that Kerry Wood in the Texas State High School Baseball Championship pitched both games of a doubleheader.
Wouldn't be surprised at all. It still happens.
Can you imagine that? I mean, he's Kerry flipping Wood,
yeah.
Right? So he wins the game, and then they say, okay, now we're in the next game. It's the same day, and the way the story is in my head, which may have no bearing on reality, is that the Cubs guy was there, and he just had his head in his hands because he's going, so now he's throwing 250 pitches,
yeah.
Or 200 pitches, whatever a high school kid throws in a doubleheader. For Kerry Wood, seven innings was probably not 200 pitches, but you know what I mean? They were just like sick about it.
Yeah, and it's still happening around youth baseball these days. I mean, there have been books that have been written about it. The Tommy John surgery is widespread throughout this country because there are managers, coaches who send kids out there and have them throw 200 pitches for a matter of 24, 48 hours.
I'm America's biggest new White Sox fan.
Yeah.
Which means I can almost name all 9 players on any given day that start.
And you'll be front row tomorrow night.
I got to talk to my CFO, but I think I'd like to. Listen.
You got to be there for this, John. Whether you agree with it or not, last year when Yoel Moncada got called up, there was about 5,000 extra tickets were sold that night. It just,
really? I'll bet the walk-up's going to be huge.
It might
even
be bigger tomorrow night.
Michael Kopech throws 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I actually, you know, one of the things that we actually had a chance to talk to his pitching coach, his AAA pitching coach, and he said the success that you're seeing over the past 6-7 starts, much of it has had to do with the fact that he's pitching rather than just throwing 100 miles per hour. He's picking and choosing when he throws 100. Now he's kind of dialing in 96, 97. But I'm pretty sure tomorrow night you're going to see an amped up Michael Kopech. And I wouldn't be surprised if he hits triple digits on the gun there.
Boy, it should be great for him to have a good outing, too, right?
Yeah, you hope so.
Because, you know, these guys can hit 100 miles an hour.
No question.
So you've got to be able to
And that was the big question this year, was developing some additional pitches because he's had the fastball, breaking ball. You know, fastball, breaking ball is really all he was working with, and it was all about developing this changeup, and changeup that's all we've heard about all year, and it seems like it's really starting to click for him, so he's becoming a more well-rounded pitcher rather than a guy who goes, good luck hitting my 100-plus mile-per-hour fastball.
They'll say thank you very much.
Right, that's how good they are in the
So who are we playing tomorrow? Has that been
published? The Twins.
Is there any way to find out?
Is
playing the Twins?
Yeah, I'll have it in my sports report at 3, John, if you want a
full
report. Look
that up. Use the Google or something, because that'd be good to know.
I will.
Well, the Twins are disappointing this year. I like our chances.
Yeah.
Go Kopech. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm all for whatever works for the White Sox because hooray for the White Sox and also hooray for us. Everybody wins if he's successful, but I would just be very stingy about that sort of thing. I'm not a manager or an owner, so I don't make that call, and I hope it works out. That's for sure. That's funny. A couple of you said, hey, John, we think you're thinking about Mark Pryor, not Kerry Wood. Actually, I was thinking about Kerry Wood, but we talked about Mark Pryor off the air, too. And I think there are some fans who resented the way Dusty Baker handled that rotation and thought that he overthrew some of those guys. But listen to this, Kevin. John, from 563, Kerry Wood pitched every 3 days from the regional through the state finals. The Cubs wanted to sue the school and the coach over the use of him.
There's a great book called The Arm out there by Jeff Passan, who writes for Yahoo Sports, and it goes into great detail about all these arm troubles kids in youth baseball are having because of stuff like that.
Man,
Kevin read this book on the way to Mexico.
Yes, Violetta remembers because she interrupted me every 5 minutes when I was trying to read the book.
I think that was an intervention. If you see somebody having a nice vacation and they're reading a book called The Arm,
it's a good point.
Like,
just want to do them a favor.
I don't know.
About?
I brought it with
out
to kill
a window.
Some time, but...
Did you see Time Magazine has a story out this week, actually just today, that what was the exact statistic? I've got it on my phone here. What percentage of teenagers read a book for recreational purposes? Let me just scroll
or
down
ever.
Here. A third of teenagers do not read books for pleasure anymore.
A third. I would have thought it was even more
what
than that.
What about young adults?
A third of teenagers do not read books for pleasure, so they'll read what they have to. Now, that means that, I guess you're right, that two-thirds of teenagers are still reading because they're into, you know, The Hobbit or Harry Potter or whatever adult or juvenile.
Well, you at least need to buy a book so that you can Instagram
this
reading
includes,
it.
This
includes in a picture.
This includes ebooks, by the way. SMH, ha ha ha. You know, I didn't used to read recreationally, you know, for fun. I was, you know, too busy reading the stuff we had to read that the idea of reading some more just seemed like a chore to me. I don't know if that's my fault or the teacher's fault or just the way it goes.
I never even read what I had to. I skim it all.
Well, that's the point. I know. And then you go, right, and now you want me to just read for fun? I don't know how we fix that, but that was my attitude my whole life growing up, was reading just was work. And by the way, I went to Catholic school long enough that the punishment would be, okay, now you have to read more, right? Or write more. If they said, okay, now you're going to write this 1,000 times, I will not throw gum or chew gum in class. It teaches kids that writing is punishment.
And reading the Bible really is not.
That was not a lot of fun.
No.
It's 2:57. Okay, Ro and Anna, right around the corner. Rokon, Anna DeVlantis are in Studio A.
I would like to launch a full and thorough investigation, John.
Into?
Well, your suit. Because everyone I've talked with verbally that I know says gray.
Go with the gray.
I've heard people on staff say gray. People called into your program say gray. And that you say some obscure internet poll decided blue was the way to go and then blue won.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there's some intervention there.
Should have.
The Russians, anything?
I will say this. At the end of the show, a woman just stood up and said, I like the blue suit. So there was that. But if I was actually thinking we're having a staff thing Wednesday of wearing the gray plaid suit to that.
Okay.
But that doesn't do the folks that went to the show any good, does it?
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
Wait, what's on Wednesday?
We got the staff show off the new studio thing.
That's a week from Wednesday.
They bumped it back a week, John.
Oh.
We have to wear suits for that? I thought it was a casual thing.
Well, I thought it'd be an occasion for me to bust out my fancy gray
suit. I see. You know, he's paid for it. He doesn't understand under the tax reform bill. He can't write off any of this anymore.
Too bad, John.
Yeah. Hey, are you guys going to play? Thank you for caring, though, Anna. Your support was.
I'm keeping
track. You were really thoughtful about this. And when I saw the blue suit was going to win, I thought, damn, Anna thinks the
gray. I really liked gray.
I mean, you could take the whole of my audience.
Mm-hmm.
Anna DeVlantis. I probably should have gone with Anna DeVlantis.
Well, it's a snappy suit. You just got to wear it some other time. So
I will. Hey, are you guys going to play the audio of Rudy Giuliani saying that the truth isn't
there's
the
no
truth?
I'm sure
I hope
that'll
so.
There is
sure
no
it'll come up
truth.
At some point. Truth is not truth.
Yeah. What a line.
Yeah. It's
somewhere somebody's going stop. Talking, Rudy.
Is this a strategy?
Well, I'll tell you who's not telling him to stop talking is the president, because it's just as wacky off of his Twitter account.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's calling everybody every name except for the child of God. Anybody who's opposed to him, regardless of what their role or rank is in this, if they disagree or they're looking into anything that he's doing, they are the enemy. And there will be a time. I mean, with his diehards, probably not. But there will be a time where most people who like the idea of a conservative or a Republican president, a pro-business president, whatever it is that floats your boat, whether it's the judges or the business or abortion or whatever it is that's got guns, whatever gets you animated to be for Donald Trump, there's going to be a moment where it's going to dawn on people that he's going to fight with you at some point.
Your turn will come, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I saw that and just went, wow, what a great line that you should not say. And there he was in defense of the president saying it. It was pretty spectacular.
He must have known when it came out of his mouth.
I know. He was going, oh, that's a good one, but I shouldn't use it.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. Jimmy Carter called him a disaster today. And Jimmy Carter knows about being a disaster as a president. There you go.
The thing that I notice anymore, though, isn't what the president is saying in his tweets. It's when he is saying them. Sometimes pace maybe 20, 30 minutes apart, but during the day now. It's not just get up in the morning and say crazy stuff.
There was a 4 o'clock in the morning tweet. Some of that crazy stuff was Saturday night into Sunday morning at 4 o'clock.
And then some of it is like at 11 in the morning, and I'm thinking, shouldn't you be, I don't know, doing what
he's doing executive time. He's got very important stuff going on there. All right, we got to run.
Have a good show.
Thank you. Bye, John.